George, can you comment a little bit more on what you think we're clinically or at a human level we're adding to patients with metastatic disease by adding in bevacizumab?
Part of the answer is we don't know yet. We all, of course, have our own hierarchies of benefit for patients. It includes things like response rate, quality of life, avoidance of toxicity, and overall survival. I think most of us put overall survival at the top of the hierarchy, and we just don't know the answer yet in terms of overall survival. And I think if you're a physician in private practice, or for that matter, in university practice, you like to be able to walk into a room and say, if I give you this drug, it will improve your survival by X number of months. I mean, you'd love to have that sort of data. I think actually part of the problem with this drug currently is that we don't have that data yet. From a quality of life standpoint, those of us who have used this have found this an incredibly easy drug for patients, truly trivial toxicity compared to every single chemotherapeutic agent in the therapeutic armamentarium. So it's not had any major negative effect on any significant percentage of patients in terms of quality of life or increase in toxicity. And for those of you who worship at the altar of response rate, I don't. It more than doubles the response rate.
Kent?
I think what the cost of this drug has done is maybe it sort of crossed the line in the eyes of private practitioners. We're beginning to realize, I think in a good way, that there's a limit to this. We can't continue to escalate the cost of medicine as we have, or it's going to take over our entire gross national product. It's going to break the bank, and we've got to stop somewhere. Maybe this drug came along right at about that time, and it just happened to trip the balance. But I was very surprised at the number of people that came up and commented about the cost of things and reaction against MRIs and PET scans and everything else at the same time. And I think maybe it's just all coming together to say enough is enough, and it just happened to be it came about when this drug sort of added to that feeling.
I have to say, anecdotally, the two patients who I believe have benefited the most from this drug, I have used it in a situation in which your trial says it shouldn't work. Now, not with capecitabine, but these are people who've gone through a series of things. They've started to have local regional recurrences and not very symptomatic, and I finally said, what the hell, let's just add bevacizumab to something I made up. One of them is actually with oral VP16, and the other one happens to be with Taxol. But it's Taxol out after she progressed on Taxotere. And in both cases, these patients are doing remarkably well with objective responses, but more importantly, they feel well. And those are the two cases that I've gotten calls about, by the way. And I'm going to have to try to justify to some doctor who works for an insurance company why I've used this incredibly expensive drug in places where it's not indicated and how it's working.
Aman?
We at MD Anderson have the same difficulty as Cliff pointed out. For the first time at MD Anderson, they told us, if you are going to prescribe Avastin to any patient, we need to have a patient insurance or third party should clear it, or patient should sign a written document that they will be responsible for the cost of the drug. I think that makes it a little difficult to prescribe the drug. Whereas I think there's no question about the efficacy and the safety profile and longer time to progression and even early signal for survival advantage. One question which at times when I get phone calls from the physicians which come up and I don't have a good answer is that there is no question that when you put two drugs together, they are better and they result in longer control of the disease. Example they always throw is gemcitabine with a taxane or capecitabine with a taxane versus the single agent. They all showed time to progression is longer and also favorable impact on the survival. Is that the case over here? I don't know. And we don't have an answer because there is no study which can address that over here.
Can you respond to that, Kathy?
Well, overall survival data we will have. It's going to take longer. Those combination chemotherapy studies do show an improvement in progression-free survival that is generally half or less than half of the improvement that we have with much greater toxicity. Now, their costs are less if you look only at the chemotherapy. I'm not sure that their costs are as much less if you factor in the cost of toxicity and managing those toxicities. For some of those regimens, you need to use growth factors. You have higher risk of hospitalization for infections and complications, greater time off work due to people's inability to work because of the toxicities of those therapies. So it frustrates me a bit that I think there's an inconsistency in how we view costs. In a lot of settings, we routinely use growth factors, we use men, and a lot of very expensive supportive care regimens or treatments for regimens that have a low risk that the guidelines wouldn't suggest it. People get lots of combined PET CT scans where they don't add to treatment, and those are horrendously expensive. So I have a problem to hear those same people bringing up cost about one specific drug that had a huge benefit in this trial. So I'm not arguing that we shouldn't consider the cost. Of course, they're important for all of our practices and our individual patients and us as a society. But to consider the costs in a vacuum only as they apply to one drug is a mistake.